At this time, I'd like to turn the meeting over to Jenny.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jenny, and I'm a very happy Al-Anon. And if it's okay with you, I think I'll just sit here instead of standing tonight. Joyce told me I could take either one, and I am a little more comfortable sitting. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for having me here tonight. This is real special to me. Whenever I'm asked to share at meeting level or at a speaker meeting, it's very dear. Sometimes I need to hear myself because I need to see my own growth. And sometimes when I sit in the room and I just listen all the time, I really don't see how I'm growing. And I need that for my own recovery. I've really been thinking, coming over here, what I was going to cheer on. And one of the things that I had found in the past when I talk, I don't go into my past too awfully much. I really like to tell you about my recovery because it's really the best time I've ever had in my life. And I know in a way, though, this is a disfavor to people because I feel that you need to know where Jenny came from so you can see where I am today. And I think that's the hope that I can give to newcomers or to anyone else. And so that's what I like to do. I want to, first of all, share about Jenny as a child and then as I grew up and got married and then eventually came to Al-Anon. I grew up in an alcoholic home, which so many of us, I think, do. My father drank. My aunt and uncles drank. My grandfather drank. And I mention these people because they were the light of my life. They were the most important people in my life. My father and grandfather gave me the only unconditional love I ever had. My father drank and did bad things, but when my father was sober, he was a very love-warming human being, and he loved this person named Jenny. Well, my mother was a rageaholic. She raged, and when my father decided to get drunk, my mother decided to scream and holler, and the fight started. Mom continued this all the time I was growing up. And I look back on that now, and I think I was really angry with her for being the way she was. And in turn, I turned out to be just like my mother. My mother's 80 years old now, and I look at her, and I see a lot of the traits in her that I still have, and I don't like them. She's still very picky. She's still argumentary. She can't find the good in people, and sometimes that's the way I am. It was very hard for my mother. I came about 14 or 15 years about after the rest of the kids. There were five of those, and then there was me. And I was a real burden to my mother because by this time she was so busy taking care of my father and my grandfather that there really wasn't much time for a young child in her life. She had to work her whole life to help support us, which was fine. But that also left me by myself an awful lot. And a lot of my insecurities started there. A lot of my memories growing up was watching, like, my grandfather on a daily basis go down and get a fifth of whiskey that he needed to get through the day. And his personality never changed. All he ever did was love me. And I talk about this because it's real important because I am now on my third marriage. And one of the reasons I'm on that third marriage is because I always went out to find a man in my life to love me and make me whole, to make me a whole human being. I was not taught when I was young that it was okay to be me, and I was okay. I was a whole person. I didn't need anybody else to make me the person I am today. And that's because my mother was not taught, and she didn't know how to love. She didn't know how to kiss. My parents were married 50 years, and I saw my parents hug one time in 50 years. And my brothers and sisters never saw that happen. And that's exactly what I grew up. I went in search to find people, places, and things to make me a person. When I was 15 years old, I was raped by a man. And 2 months later, I married the same man. Now, if I ever said that to what I call normie people, they would go, "Oh my God, that's horrible." You know, and I've said it in lots of Al-Anon meetings because I need to say it for my own recovery. And those people sit there and shake their heads, and they do understand why a 15-year-old would go out and marry this man. When we got married in a church was the last time I ever went to a church. I had felt that I had turned against God like he had turned against me. Because the God of my understanding had never gotten anybody sober. And that's all I prayed for all my life, was because I knew if my father and my grandfather were sober, things would be better in our house. And everything would be okay. And I wouldn't have to take care of my mother anymore. Well, when I went home to my mom and dad and said, I want to marry this man, and they both agreed. And this was another thing. My mom was under tremendous pressure at the time. My father had had several heart attacks. And she was, again, trying to take care of my dad. It was about this time, too, my dad decided to quit drinking. And he just totally stopped. And I think in ways this irritated my mother more than his drinking. You know. She had no one then. And so I married this man. We were married a total of 5 years, and we had 3 children. And when we got divorced, I was 19 years old with 3 babies under 3. And this was a really rocky, rocky marriage. This husband was an alcoholic, and I can say that because today he's given me permission to share that part of the story. He was 20 years old. And when we had our first wedding anniversary, he had gone into DTs, and they had to put him in a straitjacket and take him to the hospital that night. I spent our first wedding anniversary visiting this man in Kansas State Mental Institution, because that's where they put him in those days. I was 16. What's really funny is my mother came out to visit me in Kansas to see this younger daughter of hers, right, and find out how it was. And naturally, I'd never told my family because, I mean, you don't tell them things like this, do you? And my mom got off the train and she said, gee, where's Phil? And I said, gee, Mom, I got something to tell you. And I said, he's in the mental hospital because he tried to kill my new baby and I. And she said, oh, okay, but where are we going to stay tonight? And what it was is she just didn't know how to face this. You know, I've had to look back on these memories and say my mom did the very best she could. From when he was released from there, after 6 weeks, we moved to Denver. We did a lot of geographical. There's a lot of empty spots in his resume. And I was going to pretend to be Susie Homemaker, and I was going to be just like my mother, and I was going to make everything okay. And nothing was okay. As his drinking got worse, his behavior got worse, and he turned into a very violent drunk. I have talked to this man since then, and he doesn't remember very much of this. And I did my amends to this man for marrying him for all the wrong reasons and not being the type of wife he needed. And when I did, that's when I found out that he had all these blackouts all those years. And we received a lot of beatings from him. And when he was telling me about the blackouts, you know, I didn't have to sit there and remind him of all the things he had done because I'd worked the steps of this program. And it told me that I didn't have to live in the past, and all I had to do was take responsibility for my own actions and my own behavior. And when I went to make my amends, that's exactly what I was doing. I didn't have to go and shake my finger at him, and I didn't have to bring up the past. All I had to do was tell him, this is what I did, and I really need to make amends for that. Just before we left, he was to the point that he was drinking every single day, and they must have been pretty much all in blackouts. And the final day that we were home, he was going to mow the lawn. So he went next door to borrow a lawnmower from our neighbor. He proceeded to come home and start mowing the lawn, and it ran out of gas. And he got a little irate over this, and he took the lawnmower back to the neighbor's house and threw it through their picture window. And he came back in and promptly passed out in the rocking chair. And my 3-year-old looked and said, gee, Daddy's drunk again. You know, I look back now and I think it's kind of a funny story, but what's so sad is I really thought that was normal. That was normal behavior. I knew when I heard that daughter say Daddy was drunk again, I knew I couldn't stay. because I knew, here, you know, my higher power has worked in my life from the time I was little. I just never realized it. And this time he was really in my life because he said, Jenny, get out of that house. Because I knew that if it continued one more day, that I would kill those children, I would kill him, and then I would kill myself. Because there was absolutely nothing left to Jenny. Because the whole time this husband was beating on us, he was also talking to us. And there wasn't anything left. So I left, and I also knew that if I stayed right around this area, you know, I'd go back to him just like I had 100 other times. You know, my children must have felt like yo-yos. They were back and forth, back and forth. And this time I went to my folks and I said, I need to go to LA. I have a brother living there and I want to go see him. I'm leaving Phil again. Once again, they asked no questions and they gave me the money and I disappeared for a couple weeks. And that was the best thing that happened to me because in that 2 weeks' time, some sanity must have returned and I knew I could not go back into that marriage. After 2 weeks, I came back up here and I moved in with my sister and I started to try to rebuild the life with my children. What I really tried to do was to find another husband. You know, I always had to find somebody to make me better. It didn't take me too long until I found another husband. It was like two very, very sick people being very, very attracted to each other. And this man was exactly what I thought I wanted. I mean, I told him not to drink, so he didn't drink. I told him I didn't want a violent marriage, and I didn't have a violent marriage. I told him I wanted him to go to work every day, and that's exactly what he did. And every day, every week he brought the paycheck home and he put it on the table for me. It was the most boring 10 years of my life I ever had. Because in that 10 years, I didn't have the excitement of alcohol there. I didn't have that adrenaline rush that I wanted, and I needed that adrenaline rush. So I proceeded to make a crisis out of everything that happened in our life. We were married approximately 10 years, and I was getting really bored. And we had a dinner guest over one night. And the phone rang, and I picked it up, and it was my first ex-husband. I hadn't heard from this man in 13 years. Since the day I left, I had never heard from him. And he says, Jenny, guess what? I'm sober, and I want to see the kids. And I put the phone down, and I totally came unglued. I shook. I turned white. I couldn't stand. I was petrified. I was terrified that everything was going to start over again. All of the fears that I had had when I was married to this man surfaced once more. And there was somebody at the dinner table that looked across and said, Jenny, I know some place for you. There's a meeting for you. And he said, I'll take you if you want to go. I was so petrified, I would have done anything to get better. The following week, I was taken to my first Al-Anon meeting. And this is where the real joy in my life starts. Because from the minute I walked into that meeting, I knew I wanted what they had. And what that was is they didn't have any frown marks. I had gotten so depressed and so upset with my life that I had had huge frown marks on my face. And I looked around that room and I didn't see those. And I saw a couple people crying and I saw a couple people smiling. And I had never experienced anything like that before. And from that moment on, I have continued to go to Al-Anon. I have been in the program now 15 years. And I work an Al-Anon program. I don't just show up at meetings. I talk to newcomers. I greet people at the door. I wash coffee cups. I do whatever is necessary for my recovery. Soon after I started Al-Anon, my husband at that time decided that he didn't like the changes that were going on. He did not like the fact that Jenny was getting independent and some of those fears were going away. You know, one of the things that they had taught me is that alcoholism is a family disease and that it is a contagious disease. And when I got that telephone call, it made me realize how much of the ism of that disease I had. I had carried that man around on my shoulders for 13 years. I had carried that terror, that hate, that fear, all those things with me. That man had nothing to do with me for 13 years, and I had it all. This is the way I look back now, and I think every alcoholic that has affected my life is because I have carried him or her with me. And when I came to Al-Anon, they taught me that there was a way I could release these people with love, and I did not have to hold on to all that hate and fear anymore, and that I could be a whole person. It was about 2 months after starting Al-Anon that this husband decided that he didn't like the changes, and it was either going to be the way it used to be or he was leaving. And I almost hate to say this, you know, because Al-Anon kind of broke this marriage apart. And what it was, it just tipped the scales. Because I thought, I don't want to lose what I've already gained out of these programs. I mean, in 2 months, I had gotten so much better that I decided I never wanted it to be that way again if I didn't have to have it that way. And that's one thing they promised me, is that it didn't have to be that way unless I wanted it to be. So we got a divorce. And it wasn't a nice divorce. It wasn't a clean divorce. The front door was beat in. Furniture was broken, all sorts of things. I've needed to go back to my children and make amends for those times. And deep down inside, I knew I had to go, we, because at that time I had 5 children, we had to walk through this to get things better. About 3 months after, the father that I dearly loved was dying of cancer. And my husband at that time had cleaned out our checking accounts, our savings accounts, our life insurance. And here's somebody that hasn't worked in 15 years. And he put our house up for sale. All of this just before Thanksgiving. And you know, the miracles started right then, right off the bat they started. Because God took care of me, and every day he took care of me where I couldn't. There were days that people would come over and say, Jenny, have you eaten today? And I'd say, I don't know. When did you eat last? Did you eat yesterday? I don't know. You know? And they'd say, okay, sit down, you've got to eat. Jenny, come on, you've got to go to a meeting. And I had 5 kids, and I went to 7 meetings a week. And how I got there, I have no idea. But I knew that that was a safe place for me to go. This was truly a miracle time for me, because everything I needed was taken care of. There were times when we had St. Vincent de Paul came in at Christmas time and gave us baskets of food. And what was neat is the people that were delivering these food they went to school with my children, and to have my kids open that door and say, gee, thanks, we're really glad, we really need this. And they put it on the table and they thanked these kids and walked them out the door, and that's the miracle of the program working. Because if the kids hadn't had some Al-Anon, because a lot of times they went in with me, they wouldn't have been able to say those things. Right after that, that husband had child-napped one of my children. And for 2 years, I didn't know where that child was. And I had always said, if God ever took one of my kids, I would die. And there was a time when that child was gone that I felt that, once again, God had done it to me. I mean, he'd done it to me all before. He never got anybody sober. Now he was taking my kids. And this is something I thought I couldn't live without. And I had a sponsor that told me, don't worry about it, make your bed. And I said, what do you mean? That's not going to have anything to do with my son. He's disappeared. She said, make your bed. And the whole time you make that bed, I want you to turn this child over to a power greater than yourself. And I says, well, I don't believe in this God business. And she said, fine, you turn him over to his higher power, because that's who's taking care of him. And so every day for 30 days, I made my bed in the morning. And believe me, that's something I don't normally do. And for 30 days, I handed that child over to a power greater than himself, because I physically could not take care of that child. Somebody was taking care of him. It was 2 years before I saw that child again. And he was fine. And there were reasons that he was gone. And eventually he came back to live with me. I need to talk to you a little bit about my higher power. Because I've talked about I didn't believe in the God stuff. And to this day, my higher power's name is George. And George, he's very close to me. And I had picked my first sponsor because I liked her higher power. Because she sat across from a meeting, and we were down at the old Alana Club East, and in those days it still had dirt walls downstairs and the sewer pipes were up overhead. And, of course, that's where I fit, and I really thought I fit because I was the type of person that belonged in those type of places. And she sat across the table, and she said that her higher power sat on her shoulder. And she said, and when the shit gets up to here and I can't take it anymore, or she'd just push him off whenever she wanted to handle her own affairs. And when the shit would get up here, she'd say, okay, get back up there. Take it over. And I said, okay, now I can handle a higher power like that that I could control. You know? So I went up to her and I asked her if she'd be my sponsor. Immediately ran out the door after she said yes and didn't go back for 30 days. No, I think that's real normal for me. And when I went back, she said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to loan you my higher power. And she moved like this, and she took this god off her shoulder, and she put it on my shoulder. And she said, there, now you borrow him until you can find one that you feel comfortable with. And I said, well, I don't like this god stuff. And she said, fine, you call it whatever you want. You know, in this program, we don't tell you what to do. We tell you how we did it. And I said, okay, I want to call it George. Because, I mean, in those days, I still have to test her a little bit. And she says, fine, you can call it George. Well, George has sat on my shoulder now for 15 years. And I'm very comfortable with him, and I can look over like this if I need to, and I can talk to him. This is part of my recovery. Without this higher power, I wouldn't be what I am today, and I certainly couldn't be up here sharing with you. When I worked through the steps, when I got to the third step, I said, now how am I going to turn my will and my life over to this care of a higher power, over to George? And my sponsor said, every day when you get up, once again, you know, make that bed and turn yourself over to him, because you are powerless over yourself too. And I did this for a long time. And I was thinking back one day and said, gee, I wonder if I've really taken that third step. You know, and I looked deep inside myself and I thought, you know, I've taken it now, because George doesn't really sit on my shoulder anymore. George moved from my shoulder down into my heart. And I spent years, remember, trying to find something to fill that black hole within me. My parents couldn't do it. My husbands couldn't do it. I found out my children couldn't do it. You know, and I realized all of a sudden that black hole was filled. And what it was filled with my higher power. And he's what makes me whole today and what makes my recovery. Life is not always good for me and my family. I am now married to a recovering alcoholic. And the days, there are good days and there's bad days. And this has been an extremely bad year for us. We have walked through it once again. Sometimes when I'm in a lot of pain, all I need to do is just put one foot in front of the other and I keep walking. And that's what I've done all year. It's been a real hurtful year for us. There was a lot of times when I walked into a meeting and I acted like a newcomer. And I sat there and I cried. And there were plenty of people that would reach over and hug me or rub my back. And never once did I get criticized. Never once did I say, gee, Jenny, after 15 years and you're still doing that. You know, they didn't do that to me. They gave me that unconditional love that I needed so much to be whole. Without Al-Anon today, I can imagine what it would be, because eventually I think I would slip back to the way it used to be and something I chose never to be again. It takes continual effort on my part. I still go to 3 meetings a week because for me that works. Other people have to go more, other people have to go less. But for me, it's 3 meetings a week to keep me moving. My husband likes to say all the time, all it takes is just a little bit of improvement every day. And that's what I strive for. I don't strive for leaps and bounds, just a little bit of improvement. I think that's about it. It has been absolutely great setting up here and sharing, and I appreciate the opportunity to do so. Thank you very much. Thank you.